From SBR News, this is Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. This week, three segments about energy. We talk with Kim Perriman-Gilman and Dale Silla, two of the creators of Spokane's new Novara Energy Alliance. It's an organization developed by three companies to research and solve tough energy supply and demand problems and then get community buy-in. With gas at more than $5 a gallon and diesel at more than $6, electric vehicles may look more attractive to businesses. We'll learn about a new program that allows business owners to test drive electric vehicles before they decide whether to plug in. And we'll learn about the new nonprofit Washington Builds Bank, which provides money for renewable energy projects in homes and businesses. We hope this week's Inland Journal will leave you energized. The Inland Northwest faces some interesting energy and water-related challenges. For example, will the region continue to be able to generate enough hydropower to meet the demand, especially if companies build a bunch of data centers? How will the region's continued drought affect water supply, even in places like the Spokane County Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer, which is considered stable? Three Spokane area companies have created the Novara Energy Alliance to consider these problems and find solutions.
Novara, within the name itself, means new horizon.
Kim Perriman-Gilman is Novara's interim chief executive.
So if we're looking out to the horizon, we're looking to the future, not looking behind us. We're building off of what's come before us, respectful of that, but saying there's new stuff that needs to get done. Alliance, because this is allies. These are people working together, right? Let's bring people together to solve the most pressing energy issues.
The three Spokane companies that formed Novara are Avista, Itron, and McKinstry, whose senior vice president is Dale Silla, one of Novara's board members. Silla says Novara aims to take a big picture look at issues that should be solved by the region as a whole.
Really thinking about some of the energy challenges that we have today around affordability, reliability, and just the impact of increasing demand across the region. So things like the rise of AI, the build of data centers, you know, we're thinking there might be a 30% shortage in energy over the next 5 years. Compounding that with weather impacts, electrification, and so many things contributing to this means we need big solutions, and we need a lot of solutions in a pretty short time frame. So
what's Novara's role in that? Are you more of a consultant?
We're envisioning Novara in being a combination of a bridge builder, bringing people together, and more than a convener, a catalyst to actually get people together, but initiate action to ultimately create innovation, research, but not just theoretical, building out bench scale tests, building pilots, and then actually enable scaling to happen to make measurable impact within the energy industry.
Who do you want to convene? Who needs to be at these tables for these conversations?
Well, it's really the ecosystem. So at the end of the day, you want the whole energy ecosystem. And we also want to note that we're also talking about the related water challenges, because a lot of this goes hand in hand. So we want to bring everybody to the table that's willing to be part of what I call the party of the willing. Who wants to help solve the big, audacious problems of the future that are energy and related water? Our community thrives based on how energy does and how water does. They're fundamental to everything. And so it's like all the big users should be involved, as well as all the big providers and those that work in the in-between space. The innovators that can say, hey, we could do this in a more efficient way. Are we wringing out the efficiency in buildings? Are we bringing nuclear on as we should? What are the big conversations, and how do we say that we're going to have a Spokane of the future that can meet the demands of the businesses that want to be here?
As you look at the list of potential challenges, what are at the top for you? Is it a water-related issue? Is it a waste-related issue?
What we want to do is convene everyone to figure that out together, as opposed to...
So you don't have an answer to that, yeah.
Well, everybody has an answer, but is it the collective will of an answer that will get us to where we are. So the summit that we will do next fall is really about getting everybody together to define what those big issues are. What are we seeing? And what do people have passion around solving? And A, what has to get solved? We know that people care about affordability, right? We've had the value of that proposition for a long time as an economic hub. We've got to see, can we keep that? Can we keep that for people? And how do we deal with what McKinstry does so well, which is wringing out the efficiency in buildings and building microgrids that share energy between each other? There's lots of ideas, but until we can get everybody together to agree on what they want to work on together, I think we would misstep by saying what those are.
So how would you classify this so that people understand it? Is it economic development? Is it something different than that so that they can categorize it and put it in the right bucket for them?
I think ultimately there's some broad challenges that we're trying to solve. So there's energy supply and having enough energy. There's capacity constraints. Is how do you get energy from point A to point B? And it's not easy to do that if those lines are already constrained. So we need to be able to work on how we have enough energy and how we have energy at the right time and the right place. So there's a really important element around time of use. And it's both that and energy supply that come together to create this challenging situation today. There's water impacts to how we create and use energy. And we want to make sure that we're very thoughtful about how we minimize impacts on our existing water resources. So when we think about what does this mean, I think we're thinking in terms of how do we ensure that we have an affordable energy solution, a resiliency to that solution so that we have enough energy when we need it. And there's a story in Spokane and a history of all kinds of innovation that maybe don't even get told that well. You know, our hope is to tell those stories, share the expertise and the innovation to create something special in Spokane that could actually be a platform to leverage and share with others across the country. We just happen to have some unique situations here with an innovative utility, a set of conditions that are creating a very important problem to be solved today. And through that, the natural outcome will be economic development. And so that is a part of us bringing together academics, local government, research, innovation, utilities, and private enterprise.
Is this the right time for this? Do people want to be brought together for this? Sometimes it doesn't work unless everybody thinks that we have a big problem we've got to solve. This happened with the Safe and Healthy Task Force, where a group of community members said, this has become an acute situation here. Is it the sort of a parallel situation in the energy and water area?
I think there is today. You know, funny enough, 3 years ago, I had conversation with a lot of leaders around Spokane and outlined this idea for this broader energy strategy. And everybody said, great, we're in. What is it? And the whole idea is bringing clarity to what the real issues are, the challenges are, and they're front and present today. We know there's problems that need to be solved to ensure we maintain affordability and resiliency in the energy supply, but there's an opportune time to solve the problems today and create an economic development impact within the Spokane community. We have key partners that are headquarters here or have major offices here, and we have the ability to bring that together with our university partners to engage in research, to engage in new development, and be able to bring the rest of the community in terms of the innovative sector, the funding sector, to be able to launch something that we think could scale over time.
So help me understand. We're in the catalyst building, so I'll make a bad pun. What was the catalyst for getting there from 3 years ago where people said, great, but we don't know what we're talking about, to where they are now?
I believe the catalyst is motivated individuals and organizations that feel like now is the time to do something important and bringing together to make that happen. So the three founding mission partners of Novara were Avista, Itron, and McKinstry. And we all believe in the future. We all believe that if we don't act now, who will? And so that was, to some degree, the impetus of how we began to form the ideas around what Novara should be and how we might approach making a difference in these issues long term.
Without a direction set by somebody, you don't get movement. And what's beautiful about what's coming about with Novara is there's clear direction. Like, we want to be problem solvers. We don't want to just convene, right? That is not our point. We know that the investments that all of our firms have made, and other firms, many other firms, and many public pieces too, have been what have set us to where we are today. But where are we going next? And are we being thoughtful about that trajectory? And also, there's economic abilities here, right? We've done well in these communities. This is our ability to give back, but also to launch the next innovations for us to keep growing as a community. And those three organizations, I can not speak on their behalf, but speak about them from experience. They're all interested in being part of solution makers.
Kim Pearman-Gilman is the interim chief executive for the Novara Energy Alliance. Dale Silla from McKinstry is one of its board members. With gas at $5 plus a gallon and diesel at $6 plus, business owners who operate fleets of vehicles may be looking for ways to lower their transportation costs. David Funk from the Spokane company Zero Emissions Northwest wants them to consider electric vehicles.
The premise of renewables or electric vehicles is they're cheaper in the long run, but it is that upfront cost that is a challenge sometimes. And what we have seen is there are so many different types of reasons for a fleet to experience and transition, but you need to really find your own reason. Some people care about the financial savings. We've worked with food truck owners that care about not having a generator because the car is a generator as well.
Funk's company has developed a pilot program with Avista. The idea is to give companies a chance to test drive electric vehicles for a few weeks and then make a decision. Skip Hires is the product manager for Avista's Clean Energy Solutions program.
They're really concerned about the range and the extra cost of it. And I think that's one of the things that there's a lot of misconceptions out there that we're trying to really knock down and really try to say, hey, try it out. Experience it for yourself. Don't just believe what we're telling you.
When you walk in, let's say, do a cold call or something like that, what's your upper line argument to them as to why it's a good deal?
Avista's rates are so much more affordable than gas and diesel. You know, there's a huge national security aspect of this right now because this is domestic energy produced by Washingtonians, but it's a cost standpoint. Electric vehicles are cheaper in your fleet today, and they will be cheaper for the next, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Additionally, this is where the market is going. Whether or not the USA is leading, but globally, electric vehicles are expanding every quarter, every month, more and more are sold. I think China exported more electric vehicles than gas vehicles last month for the first time on record. 60% of cars sold in China are fully electric. So I would say that this is something that our businesses should be looking at, because it's happening and there's a competitive advantage to taking control of your fuel costs and your fleet management. So this, as I say, Amazon's not electrifying their fleet for a warm, fuzzy feeling in their belly. They're doing it for cold, hard cash.
I think one of the big things that really we're trying to get out the message is that electric is at like a dollar equivalent a gallon, which is, you know, that's like a 75% savings compared to the $5 for gas that people are paying now, or $6.50 for diesel. So that's immediate savings that they have. And if you look at how much it would cost over the course of a year per vehicle, it could be a $2,500 to $7,500 savings. So these are savings that businesses can take advantage of right now, year over year. It's not something that, you know, will pay off in 5-10 years.
How does it work?
So we've created this program with Avista. It's called GoDriveZen.com, and that is an EV pilot program for fleets within Avista's territory. So that's Clarkston all the way up to Colville and west towards Othello. Anywhere that's an Avista customer that has a fleet can take advantage of this.
Within Washington.
It's a 2 to 4 week pilot program. So we provide a vehicle. We provide the charging expertise. We collect data during the rental period. So at the end of the rental period, that fleet owner will understand how this truck or this SUV will operate within their business operations and how much money they could save. If you drive a lot, you'll save more. If you drive less, you'll save less. But rather than having it be a hypothetical, it's that fleet's data. It's their experience. And I'd also say critically, we want to understand where the vehicle does not achieve the business objectives. So where the range might be limited, or where the charging speed wasn't enough, or where towing wasn't enough. We've been doing this with rural fleets for quite some time. And, you know, we've seen some of the challenges that fleets encounter, whether it's payload or maybe the turnaround of how quickly that vehicle needs to get charged and then back into the field. But a lot of those are very edge cases. So to Skip's point, if you can save 10 grand a year and that one day you have to spend 30 minutes more at a charging station because it's you needed to go up to Colville and back, is that worth $10,000? That's for that business to decide. But we get the data, we get the experience, we understand it. I'll also say that the goal is not to have a fleet go and buy a truck. That's not our role here. The goal is to validate that experience, those savings, and give that fleet more confidence in maybe going forwards with electrification. And if they do, Skip's your guy to help you out with the other incentives. Avista's here to help, right? There are so many programs that a fleet can take advantage of.
So in terms of infrastructure out there, as you talk about, you know, I don't want my guys to be able to drive 300 miles and have to stop somewhere in the middle to be able to charge and hope that they find some place to charge. Is the infrastructure catching up, Skip, so that to make these business owners a little less wary about that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, the development that's happened in the last couple of years that we're pretty excited about. There's a lot of commercial charging that's happened. Avista has installed our own charging, fast chargers, DC fast chargers, so that they can charge in, you know, 10 to 30 minutes, depending on how much charge they need. And we've stationed those all around transportation corridors throughout our region so that people don't have those anxieties. But I think what also we're looking at is that the range of vehicles have increased pretty significantly. I think one of the vehicles that we're demoing here has a range of over 400 miles. So most of the range that you're looking at within the Avista territory can be managed within the day. We do think that most of the charging is going to happen at the business's depot or their place of business. And that's where we have these programs to help them install these charging infrastructures that they can charge overnight. And we cover most of the costs depending on the program. We have a couple different programs that can do that. You know, one of the programs we cover up to 75% of the cost, or the other we cover the 100% of the installation, and they just provide the charger.
So what's the business benefit for Avista for doing this?
There's a couple. One of the big things is as these fleets happen and as these fleets develop, it's going to increase load. And we need to learn about that. So that's part of why we're doing this pilot program. We're really trying to learn, help us understand how that load's going to impact our infrastructure, and really try to see where are the key places that we're going to have to add power, add infrastructure, and add capability. So that helps us grow as it grows. We can do that. But it also, You know, we want to be a trusted energy provider over the course of time. We don't want them to feel like they have to energize all their vehicles right now. We think this is a long-term solution that eventually we're going to get to most people electrifying their vehicles.
What are the range of vehicles available for people to test out and try?
Yep. So right now we'll have two. We'll have a pickup truck, a universal work vehicle that, you know, if you're driving around Spokane, you see a lot of them. It's a Chevy Silverado EV. It's got 400 miles of range. It's the fastest charging truck on the market. It has the most power. It can tow the most. When we bought it, we did so because it met all of the technical specifications of a fleet that we've evaluated before. The second vehicle will be a Chevy Bolt, 250 miles of range, and that is really good for driving around Spokane. Small, it's a crossover SUV. So there are lots of fleets that have these dual uses, right? You might have a sales guy that drives around in an SUV, and you might have the project manager that's driving around in a truck. So as we talk to fleets within the Spokane and Avista territory, it's really understanding what their future vehicle needs are going to be too. And that informs how this program evolves. Maybe in the future we have a Tesla semi-truck. Maybe in the future we have a work van. Maybe in the future we have an excavator. A lot of it is, to Skip's point, starting this outreach with these fleet customers so that we can better refine these programs to meet the needs of our fleets and really de-risk this opportunity for any business within Avista's territory.
So is your company buying these vehicles then and leasing them, or is it a joint venture that you're doing?
It's a joint partnership that we have, but for the fleets that are going to be trying these vehicles, there's a very modest fee that we do have as a part of this program. For the truck, it's $600 for 2 weeks, and all those gas savings go back into the business owner's pocket. So really, it's a couple hundred dollars for somebody to try this vehicle out for 2 weeks and validate if it works for their program.
David Funk is president of Zero Emissions Northwest. Skip Hires is the product manager for Avista's Clean Energy Solutions. One disclosure, both Zero Emissions Northwest and Avista are financial supporters of Spokane Public Radio, but we cover them as we cover any other company. People and companies with renewable energy ideas, such as installing solar panels, sometimes have trouble finding the money to do their projects. The state of Washington has created a funding source for them, a green bank, so to speak, and Eli Lieberman is helping to create it.
The Washington State Green Bank is an independent 501c3 nonprofit financial institution that was stood up by the Washington State Department of Commerce in late 2023. And the idea comes from a long line of green banks across the United States. It's a movement that started in the ARRA days, so 2009, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, mostly in the Northeast. And this was a time, you know, during the financial crisis when there wasn't a lot of lending going on and, you know, markets had sort of stalled. And the Department of Energy was sort of trying to think, how can we increase more investment in renewable energy and clean energy, but using public sector dollars in a very efficient way. So how can we get those private markets moving again, you know, that had stalled up in the financial crisis? So out of that came the initial green banks, like the New York Green Bank, the Connecticut Green Bank, and Michigan Saves, where I used to work. And really the idea is, how do you take public sector dollars and use them to leverage private sector investment? So you're really looking to make the public sector dollars like work harder. So the Connecticut Green Bank, for example, has a 7-to-1 leverage ratio. So for every dollar the state of Connecticut gives the Connecticut Green Bank, there's $7 in private sector investment. So it's a really successful model. They've deployed billions of dollars across the country. So it's exciting that we have one here now in Washington.
So what are the projects you're looking to loan money to?
So really any sort of clean energy project you could think of. So solar energy, battery storage, electric vehicles. So not necessarily for a homeowner, but for a small business that's looking to, you know, convert its fleet, the infrastructure associated with installing, you know, to power those electric vehicles. And then I think a big one for us will be building energy efficiency. The state has a clean buildings performance standard. So over the years, buildings across the state, I believe over 50,000 square feet will need to start being more efficient. And that's something that we can help finance.
Would you finance the whole cost of a building like that or a fleet or something like that? Or is it a percentage? Do you have a match that you require?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we just received our initial appropriation from the legislature, so the capitalization of the bank, $25 million, which is really exciting. And the key performance metric that the legislature has put on us is that idea of leverage. So 3-to-1 leverage for our commercial portfolio. So that means that we never really want to be the lead lender in any given project. Like, we're really trying to unlock private sector capital. So it's, you know, the question of a project where the, you know, it just needs a little bit of a credit enhancement for us, or maybe it needs a slightly blended interest rate that's a little bit lower. So yeah, we're really looking to increase that amount of private sector capital. So trying to get 3-to-1 is our goal.
So the fact that you're out there, do you anticipate that might turn out to be kind of an incentive for the private sector to come in and loan money?
Yeah, it really works. It helps so many different stakeholders. So it helps the end user, the business or the homeowner, lower their utility bills because they're able to either get solar or a more energy efficient home. It helps contractors because often in residential financing or in business financing, you know, the project itself pencils really well, but they might not be able to get the financing for it because it's like a new business. Like, say your business has only been around for a year or two, because they don't have that many audited financial statements, a lender might not feel comfortable lending for this new heat pump for that business, even though it's going to save them money. So these, and then also lenders, you know, are able to increase the amount of work that they're doing. So you have the end user getting lower utility bills, you have contractors being able to reach more customers, so that's more economic development, and then you have lenders also being able to put money into more projects. So we're able to come in those examples where, like, the lender might go, oh, okay, well, this is a, you know, it's a more nascent business, it doesn't have extensive audited financials, but the Green Bank can go, oh, you know what, we'll look at this from like a project finance perspective, and we see that over the years, energy costs are going up. This project is going to lower that, the utility bills for this organization. That's going to result in savings. That savings can cover debt. So we feel comfortable getting involved in this. So we could then, in that scenario, maybe guarantee part of the loan. So now the lender will go, oh, okay, well, our credit committee goes, we're not super comfortable. They don't have a long operating history. But now we have this guarantee from the Green Bank. So we can get to a yes.
So what's the loan process like? I mean, it's a government financed. So automatically you start thinking about red tape and all the hoops you got to jump through. Is it going to be like that? Or is it going to be more like the private sector that might be greasing
to work at the speed of the market. So, and I think that's one reason why when the Department of Commerce created us, that it set it up as an independent 501c3 nonprofit so that we would have the ability to, you know, work with a local lender like Heritage Bank here in Spokane. And, you know, they're going to need to move at the speed that the developers move at. So if we can't parity that, then we're not very useful. So, no, we want to be market efficient.
So how broad is the definition of green in Green Bank? I mean, we've talked about mostly solar. We've talked about energy efficiency in buildings. Do we also talk about wind? Do we talk about geothermal?
Yeah.
Well, what's not included in green?
You know, that's a really great question. Our primary goals are to, like, lower utility costs, so make the state more affordable, and also to lower carbon emissions. So we are a touch technology agnostic. Like, we're not going to be totally evangelists that it has to be all electric. Like, if there is a more efficient gas version of something that will lower emissions, like, we are okay with that.
Eli Lieberman is the executive director of the Washington State Green Bank, soon to be known as Washington Builds. The bank isn't yet loaning money for projects, but hopes to beginning later this year. Inland Journal is the weekly public affairs program produced at SPR News. It's on the radio every Thursday at 12:30 and every Saturday at 2:30, or online anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org. You can find our daily news podcast there anytime as well. I'm Doug Nadvornik. We'll be back with Inland Journal next week.